take a look at a verse in Bhagavad Gita that most of you are familiar with, and we'll proceed to discuss that verse in terms of the esoteric knowledge of the spiritual world. Of course, everything in Bhagavad Gita is the spiritual world because it's spoken directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And as long as your ears are fastened upon the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you are in the spiritual world, no matter what your physical location is. So this is the miracle of Bhakti Yoga, the topmost mysticism. You can change where you are simply according to the sound that comes into your ear and comes off your tongue. Think about that, please. Your location in material or spiritual existence depends on what's coming off your tongue and going into your ear. So you can transform your whole situation just by Krishna Katha, hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna. This is the secret of Bhakti Yoga. Generally, when you think of going to another place, you have to go there physically, on a bicycle, in a taxi, in a plane, on a train. But Bhakti Yoga transforms your location through divine sound vibration. Let us look at Lord Krishna's words in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Attaining the Supreme, text number 15. Mamupecha puna janma dhukkalayam asashvatam natnuvanti mahatmana samsitya paramam gataha. Krishna says, after attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. In this verse, Lord Krishna is explaining that you don't have to stay in this world of matter. This may come as a surprise to us, even those who are practicing Krishna consciousness may not fully understand that you have the power of choice. Where do you want to live? Just like in London, where do you want to live? You would say, it depends on how much I can afford. Rent or mortgage. Depends on what's available also. There are so many material considerations of where you're going to live. But here in this verse, Krishna is telling you that you can live where you want according to your desire. Because of your desire, you are situated in material existence. We have to face that point and accept our guilt. We are guilty because of desire. As Krishna explains in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the whole of material existence is a reflection upon desire. The perverted existence of material life is based upon perverted desire, just like the reflection of the sun or the moon in water. That reflection is based on water. So what is the so-called water upon which the reflection of the spiritual world is based on? Desire. Once you understand how much desire plays a role in your life, then you can grab the central dynamics of your spiritual development. But as long as we don't know the role of desire. We're always looking for that button to push. We're always looking for the central dynamics of the engine of spiritual development. Let us reflect upon this point, that material existence is based upon desire, and spiritual existence is also based upon desire. The bhakti yoga process is all about transforming desire. If you can transform your desire, you transform where you are. And desire is transformed by what you're hearing, what you're talking about. So this is the precise science of bhakti yoga. Change your desire by changing what you're talking and hearing about. When your desire changes, your location changes. Therefore, Krishna is saying, Mamupecha punarjanma. Those who achieve me, they don't achieve punarjanma. They don't achieve repeated birth and death. So if your desire goes this way or that way, achieving Krishna, achieving repeated birth and death. We need to look at ourselves squarely in the mirror and face the fact. I am what I am. I am at where I'm at because of desire. And Krishna is so kindly giving us the tools for changing our desire in this way. Our location changes. Krishna is also giving a value judgment about material existence. Those who are mahatmas, great souls, yogis in devotion, they never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries. Krishna is saying, what are you doing here? What's so great about here? Why do you cling so tightly to material existence? Why? You have to kind of grab yourself by the scruff of the neck and check yourself out. What am I doing here? What do I see here? What keeps me here? This process of self-reflection needs to be done constantly. It's not that you can do it one time. For example, when you first find out about Krishna consciousness, you do a quick reality scan of yourself. Who am I? Oh, yes, they have taught me. Jumera, Swarupoy, Krishna, and Nichiranda. Okay, that sounds good for now. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. All right, we'll go with that for a while. We'll see where it takes us. Actually, in order to stay in your normal condition, that means staying in Krishna consciousness, you always have to do a reality scan upon yourself. In fact, it's a daily event. This doesn't mean that your life is a drudgery, because every day you have to do a reality check upon yourself. What is my constitutional position? What am I meant to achieve in this life? What is success? You might think day after day of having to analyze that would become boring, but no. It's very exciting, because anything in relation to Krishna is ever increasing in transcendental experience. And transcendental experience means in relation to devotional service, therefore there must be complete happiness. But every day we're analyzing ourselves in terms of relationship with Krishna. Relationship with Krishna means relationship to devotional service. How is my service? That means, how am I relating to Krishna? We're not afraid to look at this every day. It's our heart and soul. My existence in relation to Krishna. That means my existence in relationship to devotional service. Why am I clinging to this temporary world of matter? We always have to look ourselves in the eye and ask ourselves that question. What's in it for you? What do you see? What's binding you? What hopes do you have? What dreams do you have that you haven't already been through birth after birth? What new do you hope for? What new experience are you waiting for? What are you waiting for to drop out of the sky? You need to ask yourself those questions. And the answers are always very embarrassing. Because when you look at it in a clear way, you see that I'm attached to the most foolish things. My expectations, my hopes, my aspirations are so trivial. Not only trivial, but also deadly. In that I'm desiring broken pieces of glass, as Juba Marge phrased, and in this way I'm pushing away the greatest jewel. How can I justify that to myself? And how much time am I going to spend doing this? So Krishna is making a value judgment here. Dukkhayam ashashvatam. Material existence is temporary and full of miseries. But the Mahatmas, they never return to this place. Let's hear something from Srila Prabhupada's purport. He writes, since this temporary material world is full of the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death, naturally, he who achieves the highest perfection and attains the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, does not wish to return. The supreme planet is described in Vedic literature as Avyakta and Akshara and Paramahiti. In other words, that planet is beyond our material vision and it is inexplicable. But it is the highest goal, the destination for the Mahatmas, great souls. The Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees, and thus gradually develop devotional service in Krishna consciousness and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. This verse specifically mentions the personless devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. These devotees in Krishna consciousness achieve the highest perfection of life. In other words, they are the supreme souls. Om Gyanachamanandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshur Manitanyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Purutananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Can it be so that this temporary world is full of miseries? No, there must be something here. There has to be a little something that's worthwhile. Otherwise, why are we clinging to it so tightly? There must be something. But when you scratch your head and analyze what you think is there, you're shocked to find out how repetitive and how hackneyed and how insubstantial it is that you're expecting. The thing you're expecting is so trivial. Yet, because of habit, you see, habit energy is so powerful. We cling to the trivial birth after birth. It's a very cruel process. There's nothing laudable, nothing praiseworthy about the process of clinging out of habit. You see, underneath, there's a fear. Well, I don't really know anything else. And I need nourishment for my heart. I need to feel that I'm expanding my pleasure potency somehow, even in the most tense and anxiety-ridden situation, still some or other, I have this propensity for getting pleasure. I've got to use it. Lord, I've got to do my thing somehow or other, even in this kind of place. This is determination. We all have amazing amounts of such conviction and determination. You can see this whole city of London runs on extraordinary determination. Day after day, I'll get out there and do what I have to do to earn money, to spend money, to survive. And beyond surviving, of course, I want to enjoy. I'm going to be at it day after day. This is the vow. The rut of the Londoner. Day after day, I'm going to go for it. I may not get everything I want, but I'll get pretty close. We look at our hearts and see that kind of determination, and we wonder, where would I be if I actually applied all that energy to bhakti yoga? Where would it take me? So this is the question that Krishna is dealing with in this verse. He's letting you know where it's going to take you. Once you understand where it's going to take you, then you may become enthusiastic about going there. So Krishna's inviting you. Come on. Right now you're having a low-class existence. I have much better things in store for you. Come and achieve the highest perfection. We talked about desire. How material existence is situated upon desire. And we have to admit our guilt. We're not innocent. We desired to be here. We desired to go through material existence. And you're doing that and getting the natural reactions. What are we going to do to change that desire? In order to change your desire, we talked about changing the sound vibration that goes in your ear and out of your ear. In order to change the sound vibration that goes in your ear and out of your ear, you have to change your association. So the secret to getting at desire is association. Because in the right association, you're simply going to hear Krishna Katha. And therefore, the sound vibration will change your desire, and the desire will change your location. Material existence is a very hazardous place for desiring. What makes it seem otherwise? This is the power of Maya. The illusory energy of the Lord makes it seem like it's a natural place for desiring. Material existence has so many opportunities for you. Just desire. Open your heart to it all. It'll happen somehow, to some degree. We like to desire. Think about it. Inherently, it seems like a nice thing to desire. I'm existing and I'm desiring. Doesn't it seem kind of fulfilling and, you know, it seems kind of comfortable? Yeah, desiring. Why not? He's desiring, she's desiring, the whole world is desiring. Let's all desire. It's so easy. It's so natural. It seems so appropriate to desire. But look at the results of what happens when you desire within the clutches of Maya. The desire brings you so many problems and complications. On an individual level, on a family level, on a global level, you simply see problems originating from desire. So although desire seems to be so natural, which it is, it seems to, here's the point, because it seems so natural to desire, from within material existence, you think that the results or the objects of desire are going to be easily achieved. maybe not all of them, but some of them, because it's so natural to desire. Because it's so natural to desire, isn't it so that naturally some of the desires are going to work out? If all of them work out, great. But even if just a few desires work out, it could be something, you know? Many of you can remember when you were teenagers and you didn't have the same desires that you do now as young adults or older adults. Teenagers basically just have a few desires. If I could go here or there, if I could enjoy this way or that way. And these desires, they really tortured you. And as you became older, your desires changed. Still, it seems so easy to desire that naturally you expect some of the desires to work out. So it's a very crucial moment in our spiritual progress to realize that the desire game is not going to work out. This is what separates the men from the boys, the girls from the ladies. When you finally face the fact, the desire game is not going to work. And you stop being fooled by the ease of desiring. Remember, that ease of desiring lures you into thinking that simply there'll be relative ease in getting the objects of desire. Where do we get that syndrome from? That syndrome comes from the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, desire automatically brings about the object. There's no inhibition. There are no impediments to desiring in the spiritual world. We have that in our memory. So therefore, here we are in the realm of Trigunamayi, the three modes of material nature, and we have this expectation. The desiring is going to work out, at least to some degree. Yeah, I know there's birth, death, disease, and old age. I've read Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, I know time is moving on, but still. Still, amidst all that. Can make something happen. Amidst all that. There'll be some sparkle. There'll be some glamour. There'll be some sizzle. Amidst all that. And all you need to do to cement this delusion is to associate with others who think in that way. And then, basically, the door to the prison cell shuts. Surround yourself with sense gratifiers. Surround yourself with those who believe in material existence, and you're finished. Because everyone talks the talk. Yeah, it's going to work out. Yeah. Okay, had a problem before, but I think this time we got it right. And they enthuse one another. They inspire one another. This is what families do. This is what society does. Inspires one another in how to achieve material desires. So that is why bhakti yogis restrict their association. It's not because of fanaticism, sectarianism. It's all about how to keep your desire potency pure. This desire potency that you have is a very special thing. It's the most intimate part of you. Please start thinking of desire in terms of intimacy. It is an intimate part, component of your existence to desire. Your own desires are very intimate. You take care of that desire potency very carefully. You don't just hang out with anyone and let your desires become influenced. Please think about this point. Are you carefully protecting your desire potency? Do you know how desire becomes influenced and shaped? Do you understand the role of association upon your desire? Once you understand how volatile, how more powerful than a nuclear bomb is desire, once you understand that, you're actually want to be very careful. Therefore, the bhakti yogi doesn't associate with just anyone. It's not because of theological controversies, doctrinal differences. It's not all about that. It's all about your desire potency and how it's going to be influenced, molded, and shaped. Because remember, you're here in this material world because of desire, and you can immediately go to the spiritual world because of desire. One beautiful prayer by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. It's all about the power of desire. As a newcomer to Krishna consciousness, when I was, that was back in early 73. This is the first prayer I learned. I thought, yeah, this is where you're at, and this, if you can master this prayer, you're well situated in Bhakti. Rupa Goswami prays, "My dear Lord, I know young boys have attraction for young girls, and I know young girls have attraction for young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Lord, that my mind will be attracted to you in the same spontaneous way." Now think about that. Who has to learn how to be attracted? Generally speaking, who has to learn how to be attracted? Boy, girl, man, woman. There's nothing you have to go to school to learn. It happens due to material nature. So similarly, originally we have this spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Spontaneous desire to be with Krishna. As Queen Kunti prays, "My dear Lord, just like the Ganga flows inexorably, perpetually toward the sea, similarly may my attraction always flow toward you. Gange bhogam babas." This is all about desire. In the spiritual world, let's talk about that. Samsiddhim paramam gata. The highest perfection. The ultimate achievement, the spiritual world. There, you can serve Krishna however you desire. There is not the slightest impediment to your desire in the spiritual world. You can desire to be trees and plants in the spiritual world. You can desire to be birds, bumblebees. You may desire to be cows. All the service in the spiritual realm is based on individual spiritual desires. Let me serve Krishna in this way. For example, you might consider, what is the advantage of being a bumblebee in the Loka Vrindavan? Now, of course, the Shastra will tell you that from the objective point of view, to be a servant of Krishna, then a friend of Krishna, parent of Krishna, ultimately to be a lover of Krishna. That is the hierarchy. But actually, if you're a bumblebee in Goloka Vrindavan, you're not feeling any loss. And actually, the topmost servants of the Supreme Lord, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, they glorify the bumblebees because during the day, when Krishna's away in the forest, away from the village of Vrindavan, and he's only with the cowherd boys, he's only with the creatures of the Vrindavan forest, the bumblebees can go wherever Krishna goes. Bees are not impeded. They can just go anywhere. They can buzz through the air. So the gopis are thinking like that. These bumblebees have achieved the highest destination. How fortunate they are. They can go with Krishna everywhere. Because sometimes when Krishna is wandering through the Vrindavan forest with the cowherd boys, he wants to venture off alone. for a short time, just to experience the forest by himself. Of course, the cowherd boys, they panic. Krishna's, for a split second, Krishna's gone. For a split second, Krishna has disappeared behind a tree as he's walking. That's how acute their attachment is. We always like to ask the question. You say that there is love in the material world. You think maybe it's an exaggeration when devotees may say that there's no real love in the material world. Well, here's the test. Try this. Where's the nearest park here? Where's the nearest real park? Regent's Park. Okay. Go walking with your beloved in Regent's Park. And yeah, and their trees there yet? Okay. So, as your beloved, you know, you're walking, and you know, as your beloved goes behind a tree, just, you know, just walking, meaning he or she will be behind the tree just a split second before passing out and continuing. How do you feel? Do you feel a panic stricken? Oh, the separation, unbearable. Has it happened? So therefore, we say that there's no real love in the material world. But that's how the cowherd boys feel. Krishna just steps, he's just in the course of walking through the forest. He steps behind a tree because there's trees everywhere. And the cowherd boys panic. Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? Oh no! And then Krishna appears. Oh! That is real love. You've never seen such an individual. Take your favorite person to Regent Park and make the test. Whether it's mother, father, child, or lover, and make the tree test. You'll see. But the cowherd boys actually feel like that. It's not a put-on. This is the experience of the spirit soul in relationship to the supreme soul. You can't conceive. How the depths of that attraction, the depths of that connection. But this is what Krishna wants us all to have. And the achievement is yours based on desire. And desire is molded in the association of the Mahatmas, the great yogis in devotion. Try thinking of yourself in that way. I'm a yogi in devotion. Yes. Yoga means the practice of using your senses according to a predetermined plan. In Vrindavan, all the plans are spontaneous. In the beginning, though, in the practice stage of bhakti, we have to make deliberate plans how we're going to use our senses to serve Krishna. But in Goloka Vrindavan, because everyone's desire is perfect, the whole show of Leela, the whole show of pastimes just goes on spontaneously. There's nothing but Krishna for our senses. Everyone and everything is in connection to Krishna. So therefore, Krishna's topmost devotees, the gopis, are glorifying the bees. We can't go with Krishna in the forest. Even the cowherd boys can't go everywhere that Krishna goes in the forest. But the bees can go anywhere. And the bees can get right up in Krishna's face without any fear of criticism. Bees just do their thing. They just buzz. And they go right, they buzz around Krishna's face because where is the honey that compares to Krishna's face? So it's natural the bees are always going to be buzzing around Krishna's face. No matter where he goes in the forest, if he goes off alone, the bees are right there. So some devotees want to serve Krishna as bees. Some want to serve Krishna as flowers. It's all based on desire. I want to be a flower laying at the lotus feet of Krishna. That's my desire. You can have it. You may want Krishna as your child. You can have that also. You can have that relationship, flavor of Vatsalya Ras, Krishna as your dependent. Prichit Maharaj in the Bhagavatam is wondering about this. Yashoda va Mahabhaga Papa Yasya Stanam Hari. Prichit Maharaj states that in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. How did Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mayi get such great fortune? Look at their situation. What was their desire? What was their spiritual practice? That, especially Mother Yashoda, she fed the Supreme Personality God in her breast milk. How did this happen? How did they get this Mahabhaga, this greatest fortune? Sukadeva Goswami explains that Vasudeva and Devaki, in their previous appearances in the world, they prayed that they wanted a son like the Lord. But who is like Krishna? So Krishna himself appeared as their son. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, in their previous appearances, they pray, Krishna, we want to perform the best devotional service. So, they got to see Krishna's childhood pastimes. They prayed to Brahma. Brahma, give us the best service to Krishna. So, Sanatana Goswami explains that Vasudeva and Devaki, they prayed directly to the Supreme Lord, give us a son like you. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda prayed to Brahma, give us the best devotional service. So, they are better on the, if you want to make distinctions on such a high spiritual level. They're better because, number one, they prayed for devotional service. And number two, they prayed to a devotee of Krishna instead of Krishna. So Krishna wants to show, better you approach my devotee than me. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda approached the devotee, Brahma. So, Prichit Maharaj is wondering, Yashoda va Mahabhaga Papal Yasya Stanam Hari. How did this great fortune happen? How is it that Krishna wants to come under the control of his devotee? It's based upon desire. Krishna knows that if you take devotional service properly, you can become so dedicated that Krishna will come under your control. Krishna knows that. It's all based on your desire. Yet he's giving you the facility. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna is giving you the facility to purify your desire to such an extent that he'll come under your control. And what is it that we say? That's very nice, but there's some things in this temporary, miserable world which we want to achieve. I mean, there are, sometimes we even kid ourselves. Well, there are just a few lessons I have to learn. You know, life's a learning process, you know. I still have to learn a few lessons. Then someone asks you, well, what is that lesson? Can you describe one lesson that you're supposed to learn? Well, anyway, there are some lessons that we're supposed to learn. What is the use of a learning process when no one knows what the point of the lesson is? Basically, what we're saying is there are still some things that I want to enjoy. So I know, and I've heard about the glories of the spiritual world. At the same time, there are some things in this temporary, miserable world that I just don't want to do without right now. Better that first I enjoy them and then material nature nicely and gradually takes them away. That would be the best process. But how is it that your voluntary capacity for choosing Krishna will develop if everything is simply based on material nature taking away? Now, Krishna wants to see you develop your choice muscles. He wants to see how in every situation you choose him. Then Krishna knows you're for real. Another example. Let's be practical. Let's not be impersonalist. Let's look at personal examples. In your choice of a partner, I take it here that not everyone here is going to be a brahmacharya. I take it here that ladies generally will marry or have married or so forth. So, how would you like it if your partner told you, well, you see, it's all about a process of elimination. Material nature took away all the other prospective candidates, and so there was just you. How reliable would you feel about that? I mean, you just happen to be the only candidate around, for, so, I guess, things will just happen. I mean, that's just the way it is. It reminds me of, I was speaking to an old lady in New Zealand. She was in her 80s, and she was describing what it was like during World War II, how, she was engaged to be married when she was 18, as was normal back then. And then the week after her engagement, her fiancé was shipped overseas to Europe to fight in World War II. And she didn't see him for 4 or 5 years. And so she just waited patiently for his return. So I said to her, that's really chaste of you. I mean, you really were faithful for 5 years while you were engaged to be married at 18, and immediately your fiancé is taken to the other side of the world to war, and you just patiently waited for 5 years, not knowing what would happen to him, whether he would ever return alive, and you just were true and faithful, and that's really impressive. She just looked at me and said, that's not like that. Simply, there were no men around. All the men were overseas. They were all fighting in the war, so there was no choice. So is that how we want to finally focus on Krishna? Well, I guess there's just no choice. I've tried everything else. What kind of love is that? How is that showing that Krishna is all attractive? Now, it's true that you can approach bhakti in that way. It's true. But sooner or later, we have to deal with the reality of voluntarily choosing Krishna, building up our choice muscles. Just like Queen Kunti prays, Gange Vogamavasa. May my attraction constantly flow towards Krishna. Kunti Devi is so exalted, she's praying to Krishna, please cut my attachment to my family members so it can purely be for you. But who are Kunti Devi's family members? Look at her children, Arjuna, Yudhisthira, like that. Look at her relatives. Yes, she's praying to praying to Krishna, please cut off my attachment to my family members so I can focus on you. This is the choice muscles. This is the power of choice. And that's what makes her prayer so beautiful. Her family members are the exalted associates of Krishna. Yet she's praying, cut off that attachment. Out of humility, she's presenting herself that I have mundane attachment to mundane bodies. Krishna, I'm praying, cut that attachment. Let me focus only upon you. This is building of the choice muscles. So, rather than wait for Krishna to take it all away, let's look at the circumstances we have now and see how can we increase our choosing of Krishna. And then you'll start to see the preliminaries for more love developing. Real love is based on voluntary choice. That's what Krishna relishes. What's the point in our waiting around thinking, okay, if Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he wants me to be Krishna conscious, he'll force me to be Krishna conscious. I'll just wait until then. When he wants, then I'll do it. It's up to him. Krishna is always wanting that you be Krishna conscious. He makes his request quite clear in Bhagavad Gita. So when we say like that, when he wants, then it will happen. That's a way of saying no. And we're saying no like that because of lack of desire. It's amazing, you know, how our desire will become inflamed in the right association. That's what everyone cherishes about the association of devotees. You can feel your desire capacity just becoming spiritually agitated. And you feel so happy. Yes, bhakti yoga, devotional service. You feel that contagious enthusiasm in the association of devotees. And yes, that is the spiritual world. In Melbourne, Australia, Srila Prabhupada was explaining that here's how to change your location from the material to the spiritual world. Immediately, just say, I'm only going to act for Krishna's pleasure. Immediately, you're in the spiritual world. Then you say, well, okay, I'm only going to act for Krishna's pleasure in the spiritual world. Gradually, if you keep doing that every day, you'll begin to perceive that your location is different. You see, a child may have a diamond in his hand, but the child doesn't know the worth of the diamond. But still, that diamond is there in the child's hand. Because the child's not aware of the value of the diamond, the child may throw that diamond away or try to eat it or something. In other words, the child has the diamond, but the child is not conscious of what he has. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada writes in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam that even a neophyte in Krishna consciousness is unconsciously liberated. You have the diamond in your hand. The problem, though, is that because you're not conscious of the value of what you have, you can easily throw it away, and that's our problem. Every day we're considering, is it really a diamond? And, aren't there other things to do besides emotional service? And I mean, you know, we don't want to be fanatical. I mean, shouldn't we have a balanced life, you know? Some Krishna, some Maya. Right? We don't want to be too focused on Krishna. Actually, we have to live in this world. And although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if we become too focused on him, we may not be able to function in our material agency. So, in conclusion, then, it's necessary to have some Maya in your life in order to allow you to continue functioning in this world. You see? It all makes sense, doesn't it? Whereas, if there's too much Krishna in your life, you may undergo the risk of becoming too spiritual. You've seen that problem, right? Yes. We've seen enormous problems caused by people becoming too spiritual. Of course, there's no such problem, but we imagine like that. You know, is it possible you could be too Krishna conscious? Is it possible you could be too Krishna conscious too quickly? Yes. We have all these ideas in our mind how to cling to material nature. But then, when we look at what material nature is offering us, it's embarrassing. Our attachment potency is so misled. And then, we resent when we don't get what we want. We even blame Krishna. Instead of our looking and seeing how Krishna is giving us so many circumstances to increase our choice muscles, opportunities for choosing Krishna. Yes, I'll do this for Krishna. Yes, I'll increase my Krishna consciousness. That's how the bhakti grows. So there's no point now waiting around for when circumstances crush us to the ground. Don't worry, there'll be crushing experiences in material nature. It'll always happen. But the times when you really make advancement is when you choose. Voluntarily, let me step forward, increase my service. That is the method of the yogis in devotion, the great souls. And after attaining Krishna, they never return to this temporary world. Meaning, even if by the Lord's desire, they stay in this world to serve the Lord, because their purpose is simply to serve Krishna, they're actually not in the material world, even though apparently they seem to be here. So let us please remember the power of our desire. Let us please remember building our choice muscles, seizing opportunities to do that, and of course, all that desire transformation and building of the choice muscles happens in the proper association of enlivened devotees. Then you feel that contagious effect, that you feel just, I'm choosing Krishna. Yes, I'm choosing to do this. This is what I want to do. This is what makes sense. You can feel that in the proper association. And the more you stay in the proper association, the more you'll make the right choices.